Welcome to the Cinepax Podcast. I'm Tyler Casey, and in this episode, I sit down with music producer Remedy. He produced a lot of hits coming out of the Bay Area, and we kind of talk everything from him being a producer to shooting videos to kind of his backstory. This is definitely a great episode for anyone looking to produce music or shoot music videos. This episode was a part of my old podcast, The Wolf Talk Podcast. I wanted to leave it up here because it definitely has some value for some people. If you do find it valuable, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes. Enjoy the episode. Today we have a very special guest on, Remedy. How's it going, man?
It's all good. Going yeah. cool, man.
Yeah.
Living life.
Yeah, it's tight. Yeah, you were just in my live recently, and yeah, you just popped in, and then someone was asking for an interview, and I was like, man, I need a Remedy on Wolf Talk. So
hey, I pulled up the next
pulled
couple
up
days,
next man. Couple days, and then you'll be on hopefully Base Media soon.
Yep,
with those guys.
Yeah,
theirs is a little different, so I think it'll be dope to have both.
It's all
so
good.
Yeah. So what have you been up to, man?
Just working, trying to stay consistent with being a creative. You know, living mm-hmm. life, because sometimes when you get into making music, you kind of lose life, you feel me? So then you start making music that don't mean nothing. A lot of my music is like life-based. It's based on really what I go through at a certain time. So mm-hmm. like if I'm in pain or going through some shit, then my music gonna come out like that. Or
yeah.
if I'm partying, my music gonna come out like that. So I've been basically living life just getting inspiration for the music and putting mm-hmm. it together.
Trying yeah.
to create a full body of work.
Nice. And if people don't know who you are, can you give us a little rundown of who Remedy is, what he's about?
Remedy is pretty much an individual that grew up in a bad neighborhood and you know, the typical struggles of a lot of street type rappers, but one who, like I said, is an individual, always kind of thought for himself and always thought of himself more than just the hood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like street inspiration mm-hmm. rapper, like if you really want to get to the nitty gritty, it's like the street inspirational rapper.
Yeah, and you're not only a rapper as well, right? You also produce.
Yeah, I produce music. I engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I've shot videos, edited videos, mm-hmm. still to this day.
Yeah. You collab a lot with the guy, everything. B Giggs.
Yep. Shout out B Giggs.
You ever see B Giggs' podcast?
Nah, wait.
He was on this.
He was right here with y'all?
Yeah, he was sitting right next to where you were.
He never sent it to me.
I'll send it to you, man.
Shout out B Giggs, man. Mm-hmm. That's my guy. We did a lot of work together.
Yeah, it was a good one. He even talked about you, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, check it out. There's the video and the audio. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's tight. And then you produced quite a lot of big tracks here in the Bay Area that kind of popped off a little bit.
Yeah.
Where some of those? I know one's On My Mama by T.O.
Yep. I got a couple with I Am Sue. Mm-hmm. I got a couple with Show Banger, a couple with June on the beat, a couple with Mozzie, a couple with... It's kind of a lot. Extensive list of people. A bunch of up-and-comers. Shit, I can't really think of none off the top of my head like that stand out. But
no, it's definitely a lot.
Is probably like one of the most known ones.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Roach Gigs, too.
Yeah, Roach Gigs, too. Yeah, I saw you guys just had a show recently in at the Cornerstone in Berkeley. Yeah, that shit looked tight.
Man,
that was cool, man.
It's crazy because in the Bay, for some reason, a lot of people don't have like actual shows,
mm-hmm.
Concerts. And for him to be gone for as long as he's been, like,
yeah.
out of the music scene and be able to come back and still sell out a 3 to 5, like, 500 people concert? Like,
yeah, it's a pretty big venue. I've been there a few times, yeah.
That shit is crazy. Like,
yeah.
It's, man,
it look lit.
It's hard enough for motherfuckers who popping in the Bay to
yeah.
do the 500 people shit, so... Shout out to
yeah,
him.
That was
Shout
crazy.
Out to
yeah,
the people that came out, man. That was
definitely
a
like
show.
His videos. I think he used to shoot a lot with David Camarena, right?
Yep, David Camarena, Eris Jerome,
mm-hmm.
and Chris Simmons.
They yes.
all kind of
yeah,
like
yeah.
under the same umbrella.
Yeah, when those were some of the early videos that really like inspired me to start shooting music videos in the beginning. Just watching his videos, like trying to think of some of the ones, but they were all just sick. Like all his videos were hella tight, hella creative.
Yeah. Definitely.
And then I know you guys had a few videos together too.
Yeah,
I think I saw one that you edited too. It was like, I remember this one. I thought this was like probably like the first few times I saw you. Like it was a black and white video,
mm-hmm.
and it had like some red. I don't even remember. I don't remember the name of it, but I know you edited it.
Well, Roach.
I don't know if it was with the Roach or it was just you, but it was black and white, and the edits were pretty clean.
Probably was me. I had a few of those in my days.
Yeah.
I used to let a black and white look.
Facts. Yeah. So let's go back to the beginning. What how'd you first get into music and whatnot?
Long story short, like I said, typical hood story. I was growing up playing a lot of sports. That kind of was my life. It kind of taught me how to focus on one thing and really grind that type of thing out. Unfortunately, due to gun violence, I ended up getting shot in a wheelchair at a young age. So from when I got shot, which was 14, to like graduating, I kind of was floating. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I didn't have real passion for anything because all I was thinking was, like, I just want to still play sports. I was, like, caught up in trying to play sports. And being that I couldn't play that, I was, like, just floating around living. Got into the party scene heavy. That's part of why I'm still able to be myself was, at the time, was girls, you know, people usually getting wheelchairs and things of that nature and going to depression mode and all of that. Once I seen I could still get girls, it kind of kept me alive. You know what I mean? Especially at a young age, because, you know, teenagers, all we care about is girls go girl crazy. Yeah. So from then, I used to go to parties, and I always liked music and was around music because, like, my older brothers and shit like that was always trying to rap.
Mm-hmm. And where were we growing up at this time?
I grew up in San Francisco for the most part, and then I moved to Antioch.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, I just was going to parties and was hearing songs, and, like, I would know people from, I don't know how, like, I went to Deer Valley in the 11th grade, and, like, for some reason, Deer Valley had so many people who grew into to be stars or Bay Area, like, known people. So, like, at the time, I knew, like, Young Kurt. And mm-hmm. shit like that. So music was accessible, and he was like the biggest shit damn near out at the time. So I was like, shit, it's an opportunity for me to get in there and try to dive into it. I got into making beats, learned a little bit from my dad's girlfriend and her kids at the time was like extra into music too. So I learned some shit for them. I looked on YouTube and spent like, bruh, countless hours of just tutorials and trying shit and fucking up and trying shit and fucking up.
Mm-hmm.
So I started off producing first.
Okay.
So that was what that was. At that time, I just started making beats. Like, I was just trying to get my beats to anybody who can rap on them for free. I'm like, anybody. It can be like a rapper that's like a literal nobody. Like, bro, I just want people to be heard on my beats. From then, I got into Pro Tools and stuff like that.
Okay.
So that's like the engineering side.
Yeah.
So from producing, I went to engineering. And I did that because it was a bunch of kids from my hood, you know, I grew up with that was rapping.
Okay, yeah.
And they was the ones that was willing to rap on my beats.
Mm.
So I had to
make them sound good on your beats.
I had to learn how to be fuck it, let me just be the guy. Like, because now I want people on my beats, but it's taking too long when I send them the beats. So
yeah, exactly.
Now they can come to my house and just record with me.
Record and then get everything there.
So I had to spend countless hours again on YouTube, learning on Pro Tools, practicing, fucking up. I ended up getting a shady ass computer from one of the little partners or something out here that was, you know, hitting licks and shit like that. Not saying it's good, but that's kind of what happened. End up getting a $100 mic from Young Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
I still got that mic to this day, by the way. That mic, it's a lot of hits from that mic. Like, he made all, like, the Mobby Train and all of his, like, main songs with that mic. So I think that mic is, like, got some kind of gold shit to it.
That's sick.
Yeah. Spent hours and hours doing that. And learned how to engineer. So I started engineering for people from my hood. Over time, though, a lot of them gave up on a grind of music.
Mm-hmm.
So they go back and do hood shit, and they start being in and out of jail, which kind of fucked up what I was trying to put together, because I was trying to be like the getaway, you know, from the hood shit.
Yeah.
Being that they start going to jail, now I'm making all these beats and still don't have nobody to give the beats to.
Yeah.
I tried it. So I was like, fuck it, let me try rapping. And I never took it serious, but I just was just doing it, like, a lot. I was practicing, still on YouTube, go on YouTube, like, how do you construct a song, and how do you do this, and what do you do this, and do that, and whatever, any kind of thought process I had, I was just sitting there learning and trying shit, trial and error. So, like...
And it's not easy learning from YouTube. I know some people, like,
can't learn from YouTube like they need to learn in person, you
That's
know?
That's crazy. Because, like, I get it, but, like,
but, I mean, also, you have to dig through, like, a lot of trash. Yeah. Like, there's people, like, teaching people, like, really stupid stuff on YouTube.
Shit, but the, but, the stupid stuff could be your trick. Like, you
that's,
know
true.
What I'm saying? Like,
that's true. That's
it,
true.
It's weird.
But it takes a lot of work, I feel like, you know? Yeah. Like, you really got to dig and, like, I don't know, just apply that knowledge and, like, really practice it, you know? Because you could watch YouTube videos all day, but if you're not actually... I think it's better, like, in the sense of, like, that you can actually be right there and, like, go to your computer and do it. Because, yeah. Like, with videos, like, if you watch a video about lighting or, like, how to shoot videos, yeah. It's totally different than going out and shooting a video, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the problem with, like, video people. Mm-hmm. Is, like, they watch all the, like, I make YouTube videos, you know? I mean, like, editing's a little different if you have the footage.
Yeah.
But, like, if you watch videos on, like, how to, like shoot and camera settings, if you don't go do that and, like, get it in your brain... It's not going to help you out at all, you know?
Yeah.
But, so yeah, you started just watching YouTube videos, how to construct songs and whatnot, and you started up Remedy?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, Remedy was, that was the beginning of Remedy.
Yeah.
The name come from me being a young scholar. I was always in the good grades and I was a wordy dude. So I used to always read the dictionary and I just liked the definition of it, I think, at a young age.
Okay, cool.
Was, you know, so I just stuck with it and ran with that. I didn't put no music out for a long time until probably like 2 or 3 years after starting to just try music.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't put it out. Like, I used to just be like the
dude. Yeah,
like
just keep it, yeah. And just kept just it showing myself. Your friends or whatever.
Luckily, I didn't because I look back at it and the shit was pretty whack. and if you start off pretty whack, it's kind of hard to get out of that hole. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? So, damn. Where do I go from here?
How'd you start linking up with, like, Roach Gigs and Showbang and all those guys?
That came, like, later.
Uh-huh.
So, all right, let me fast forward the story. Boom. I was still going to parties and stuff. I met Priceless the Rock and Boog and J12 and all of these people, but this was before the whole dance craze happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is a recurring event in my story is meeting people right before shit happens. So mm-hmm. like I meet them from going to parties and just being a random dude in a wheelchair at their parties. You know, you're gonna attract a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Because, like, bro, people in chairs don't just go to parties like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do go to parties, they not on the bitches like that. And I was just like, wow. So I meet them, boom. They find out I make beats. Well, I knew Boog from way back in the day, but Priceless and them find out I make beats and make music. I start sending my music to J12. That was the first mm-hmm. person who heard my music. So I was like, anything I had. And at that time, like I said, I was heavily into parties and my music is about my life. So at mm-hmm. the time, my life was partying. So I just kept sending everything to J12. And he was playing that shit in their parties, and that shit just yeah. started bubbling. Like, all the little party hits was bubbling, crazy, da-da-da. Sadly enough, my business wasn't right back then.
Hmm.
So I really didn't make a lot of money from it, and it wasn't a lot of videos going on. It was only, like, Ayres Jerome, and at the time, I think I heard, like, he was, like... Not to be putting his business out, I think it was like $500-$600 for a video.
Yeah.
At that time, that sounded like something.
Yeah,
crazy
that's
to
insane.
Me.
Yeah.
As a 18, 19 year old, like, bro.
Even just for videos that's back wild. Then, that's like, probably pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's like wild.
Yeah.
Which, it you know, it all makes sense over time. Boom, fast forward from that. Like I said, my business wasn't right, so I wasn't making no money. I had to find a source of income, and I looked at the opportunity of learning to shoot videos. I don't know where the fuck it came in my head, but like you said before, you used to watch Ayres Jerome and all of them. I used to be heavily into their videos, their early videos, and Colin Tilly when he was on Vimeo, his early videos. I used
yeah.
to be watching all of their shit. And I was like, shit, let me look up the cameras and stuff like that, because everybody told me, like Roach used to, like, people used to just tell me, like, bro, they're shooting these dope-ass videos with these little handheld cameras. I'm like, they can't cost that much. So I go look
yeah.
it up, and it was like, I think I had, like, the Canon T2i or something, which
yeah,
was, like, at the time, like, $1,600.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Damn, that was hella early
yeah,
then.
It was, like, the beginning of them.
Yeah.
So, like I said, before I went and invested the money I did have saved up, spent hours on YouTube watching videos
yeah.
about why the camera is good, what you need for the camera,
mm-hmm.
the editing side of it, and like, bro, hours.
Yeah.
Hours. Made the investment, went broke. Spent hella days. Like you said, this was like one of those things like you can't just learn from watching. So I spent hella days being out just shooting.
Yeah.
Antioch, random, when I say the most, I still got this footage. Like, I got all footage on all my hard drives still. Just random shooting, going around shooting the park, shooting people walking down the street, shooting stores, yeah. shooting my partners, walk to the store, shooting my partners, smoking, and just shooting. Just
yeah.
Shooting, shooting, editing, shooting, editing, shooting, editing. Fucking up, fucking up. I forgot who my first video was. I think it was somebody that, his name is AMG Manson. Well, no. My first video was actually C Hustle, somebody I grew up with, but that was a free. My first paid video was somebody named AMG Mansion, and they had like a Gone Bananas crew. He paid me for like, I think like a 3-video deal for like $500-$600.
Yeah.
I was juiced. I was like, shit, that's basically paying me back for my camera.
Yeah, exactly.
So I did his. Then I did, I don't know, just a variety of up-and-coming rappers at the time. I think my first person I came across that was like something of importance was Roach Giggs. And I got at him through Twitter about beats. I just sent him some beats. He liked the beats. He rapped on them, put them out. Then he was shooting a Can I Rap video when Giants had the
I remember that. Yeah.
That was your beat?
Nah, that was CeeLo. Shout out CeeLo.
That was CeeLo.
He's from 925 too. We went to school together in Antioch and stuff too. So long story short, he like, yeah, man, I like your beats. He's like, just come out and fuck with us. Came out, we linked. It's just never been the same since. I had my little camera on me and took little behind the scenes videos and shit.
That's what's up.
Just never been the same. And then we was locked in after that. End up going on tour with him. While on tour, you know, they knew I rapped, but I don't think they knew all the way.
Yeah.
So, like, while on tour, you know, I just start playing music or playing beats and playing music that I had. And you know, I was bringing my little laptop recording on the road.
Yeah.
And they was like, you know, they started getting into my shit. And he surprised me on my birthday. He had a show in Oakland. He surprised me and just gave me the mic and played my song.
That's sick.
Me and Henry had recorded a song. He put on his tape. He just played my mic and recorded a song. No, I mean, played the song. And I had to perform and shit. Ever since that day, I never looked back.
That's tight. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's
a pretty crazy story.
There's a lot of shit in between here.
Yeah, but I think that's a good, highlight. Yeah,
I tried to just...
Yeah, so from there, were you kind of, like, good off the video stuff and you kind of wanted to pursue being, like, an artist and, like...
Yeah, but no, because I still need the money.
Yeah.
And my business wasn't right. So, like, it was like we'd go to shows with Roach, and it would go from me being a cameraman to me being our thing at the shows was he would announce that, like, his cameraman rapped too, and he would start recording me while I'm performing. And it turned from that to, like, me doing 3 songs in between the set to me opening up for him. And
yeah.
You feel me? And shit. Yeah, that camera shit started slowly getting out the way.
Yeah.
Then my music business started getting
in place. What were some of the steps that you took to get your music business in place? What were some of those major steps that you had to take to...
Asking a lot of questions. I knew a lot of people and a lot, you know, that was doing music and stuff. And especially through doing videos at that early time when nobody was doing
videos. Yeah, exactly.
I was like the most accessible guy. So like Eris Jerome and him, like I said, at the time was like $500 to $1,000.
Yeah.
There's like the street niggas who probably got like $250 or something. I was taking all of their money.
Yeah.
So I would know all of them. And some of them would grow into be people. Like I did videos with DB. Mm-hmm. And DB was already somebody, but he would grow on to be somebody, and I would meet, like, his partner behind the scenes who might know his business, and they would be like, oh, if you do this and do that and put this and
yeah.
do that. So along the way, I ended up meeting Stretch and Will and Huggy, which was, they kind of, like, Stretch manages damn near anybody out the Bay.
Yeah.
And I kind of linked with the distribution of Empire through them.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't no deal. It wasn't no paperwork. It was just like, put your shit on iTunes and whatever it do, it do.
Yeah. So they kind of just guided you?
Yeah.
That's tight. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's tight. Let's fast forward a little bit. How did you link up with SOB? for the song?
I think so. When they was coming up, I'm still an active artist.
Yeah.
But I think I had like a big splash at an earlier time. So like my music was known from a younger generation, from the parties and shit like
that.
So they knew of my name.
Gotcha.
And, this is another case of me getting with people right before it works. Young T.O. had a song called Cautious, and he had another song, I forgot what it was. And this was before I didn't know B Giggs was shooting their videos, but I knew who B Giggs was.
Okay, so, cool. I think B Giggs shot Cautious, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had another video, but I think he deleted the video. It's something about having his 40 and his girl wedding. But I loved the song, and this was like early.
Gotcha.
But I heard like little similarities with our styles and shit. But I kind of liked his music because it was just him by himself at the time.
T.O.?
Yeah. My bad. T.O., yeah. So I had posted him. I posted both of the songs. And, you know, he hit me back like on some like, right on, bro. You know, normal
shit.
Yeah,
normal
like
stuff. Yeah.
Too crazy. But I think when that shit started really happening for them, like when Different and then they dropped Anti and all that shit was going up. I don't know if he remembered me from back then, but I just randomly DM'd him like, bro, I got some beats for y'all. Da-da-da. They was on live, you know, Instagram live. That's when I first came out. I'm like, I got beats for y'all. They in the studio. They was at the grill.
Yeah.
And they was like, shit, pull up. And then I pulled up with a hard drive full of beats. They picked like 15, 20 beats. I gave him some kind of super, like, some jug. Like,
yeah.
You feel me? Because I knew at that time when it was just starting, I knew they didn't have, like, the money to be like, yeah, I need 1,000 per beat. And da, da, da.
So yeah.
Like, shit, all right, any beat y'all use, just give me this, and we good.
Yeah.
That's how it been. So ever since then, I kind of just been locked in with them.
They still probably have songs, with like, unreleased songs with
hell
your beats
yeah.
on them.
Hell
yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Do you have any beats produced on T.O.'s new mixtape?
I'm not sure right now,
mm-hmm.
but it's definitely possible. I could probably even just send him some random shit now and
like,
he'll record it and probably be like, yeah, bro, fuck with this. And
yeah.
Put it on there.
That's tight. Yeah, because, yeah, I don't know. I've done a few videos to some of your beats. I did the Boy Young Pinch one.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. I didn't even hear about Young Pinch. I didn't even know who Young Pinch was before like I shot that video. Like the Boy, I randomly just like I met T.O. I did the video. What video was that? You helped me on that one. It's the 2-2 Gang video. That was like the first time that like I shot a video with just them. Like I did one featuring Mike Sherman, T.O.
Yeah.
And this other guy named Leek. And then
yeah,
we
I
did
like that video.
Oh
like
yeah, that was a fun one. Yeah. Yeah. And then we did the Right Now remix, or just the regular Right Now video with T.O. and Slimmy. Didn't really talk to him there. And then, like, I actually ran into him at, like, Fry's, T.O.
That's hella
They were
crazy.
At Fry's in Concord. I was like, hey, I just helped. I was like, what's up, man? And he looked at me hella weird. I was like, oh, I just filmed that Right Now video with you. And then he's like, oh, shit. And then I gave him my number and then shot the 2-2 game. But it was just hella funny how I linked up with the Boy. But then we... Yeah, I heard that song and it was sick. What's in that song and in a lot of your beats, there's like the school bell sound.
Mm-hmm.
What where'd that kind of come from?
Just naturally trying to set myself apart from everybody. It's like a transition, so it's kind of like, you know, you hear it. It's like a lot of people got like fog horns or...
Yeah.
I don't know, like some people use like laser sounds or some people use like shit that sound like a fucking airplane flying or something, like, you know what I mean? It's just a transition to try to separate myself from everybody
else. Gotcha.
Sadly, over time a lot of people adapted that into their repertoire, so now I'm trying to, you know,
try to mix it up. Yeah.
Come with more shit to be like set me apart.
Yeah. Maybe I don't know, cuz like people hate school too. So maybe it might turn them off to the song.
That's hella tight. Nah, shit.
I'm playing.
I hate
when a song has like a similar sound to like whatever ringtone or like my text or something, you know. I don't know. I hate songs with police sirens in them too. That shit pisses me off.
You
I get like hella anxiety. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. That shit be crazy.
That's the worst. Yeah.
That was the school bells. I don't know how I came up with that though.
Yeah.
Just random.
That's tight.
It was random.
That's cool. So Let's talk a little bit about like producers in the Bay Area. What advice do you have like for producers, like for the business side of things, not even specifically in the Bay Area, just producers starting out in general, to make as much money, not to make as much, just to protect themselves in case like a song blows up, you know? Mm-hmm. What should they do to, what are some tips that you have for them to protect themselves?
Talk about this type of shit before anything does happen.
Yeah.
So if you, not even if you think a song will blow up, just have an understanding with that artist and have a real relationship with the artist instead of it being like you just sending them beats and they never know who you are. Try to meet this person and know this person. Uh-huh. So it humanizes the situation when they do make a lot of money. So now they like, I fuck with you as a person instead of it being like, oh, this is just some random nigga that sent me beats.
Yeah.
So if you just some random nigga that send somebody beats and they blow up off your beat, yeah, they might throw you something or, you know, they might be obligated to, you know, certain, give you a certain amount or something.
Yeah.
But like if you humanize the situation, like rather than be a random nigga, now it's like, I know this dude, like, damn, that's, you know, I'm making this much money and he ain't getting nothing from it. I need to,
you know, is there any way that you can publish your beats or do something along those lines?
Yeah, they got with ASCAP and BMI and stuff like that. Sadly though, I'm gonna keep it all the way real with you, bro. The business in the Bay Area is fucked.
Yeah. Like, now I've heard of some stuff where like fucked. When bigger artists will get like beats and then they'll put when like publishing it, they'll say they produce that beat
and they will take the publishing. They'll take younger producers don't know what the fuck that is.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's something called mechanicals, and that works like if I was to make a song for you or a beat for you,
mm-hmm.
it should be splits with what you make on it.
So yeah,
like
isn't
every sale, I should get a certain percent.
Yeah, exactly.
But it don't work like that, especially not in the Bay, only because I don't think our market is big enough for people to care for shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the Bay is just one of them places where it's kind of like, you know, fuck somebody over or get fucked over. That's how everybody look at
yeah.
it. It's like play or get played. And it's terrible business. I'm gonna keep it real. It's terrible. That's the one thing I don't like about Bay Area rap scene is the business is terrible. To try to get mechanicals, because the way that mechanical shit work, it's not like somebody, you put somebody in place to get them for you. Like you could, mm-hmm. like say if I was signed to Empire as a producer, when it come to larger artists, like say if I did a beat for, I don't know, random 2 Chainz.
Yeah.
Empire would contact 2 Chainz people like, can I get y'all spreadsheets on y'all album because we produce these songs and we want our cuts for these songs.
Yeah, exactly.
And you would still essentially have to wait for them to be like, all right, we can give them their money now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they could be owing you for fucking ever, which is the terrible side of business. But at the rate in the Bay Area, people not like, it's sometimes it's nobody to contact. Like,
yeah, especially like, when it's just like an artist, especially with like artists signed to Empire and being like, it's kind of just like they're still independent in a sense, but they still do have a label backing them.
And that's the thing. That's part of why it's like that's part of the independent side is like me as an artist, if you produce the song for me, I'm still independent. Even if I'm signed with Empire and I'm doing big shit, it's like a partnership. So I'm still independent at that point. So I would need to be the one to calculate the mechanicals and give you your portion.
Exactly.
Empire kind of just would pay me and I'm supposed to pay everybody.
Yeah.
That don't fucking happen.
No, it doesn't happen. And I've even heard that with artists who are signed to Empire, and Empire will give them like a cut for like marketing, like for their video. So like, I don't know, here's $10,000. And I've even heard of artists just spending that on themselves and then like, oh, I got $500 for a video. And it's just definitely, like, you know, so
definitely.
And I know there's a lot more to it.
I think at that point though, it's on the person who providing the service though. So like, you know, Empire definitely is the way it works is like they definitely would trust somebody to be like, all right, you got a budget for videos. Here go 500. Here go 5,000 for videos.
Yeah.
The person going to think of that 5,000 as $5,000. You feel me?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's for this many videos. It's kind of going to be like, all right, let me go work my jig with these cameramen so I can keep the rest of that money.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Because of the business. It's like because the business is really bad out here.
Yeah.
I wish it was better biz. That's one thing about the Bay Area rap scene, period. I just wish the business was
instead of thinking of it as, I got 5,000, let me put another 5,000 on that and then have way better videos.
Or even just, I got 5,000, let me get with the cameraman I work with.
Yeah. Really put them on. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really give them something to look forward to and want to work with.
Level up your visuals in a sense. Or just anything, honestly. But yeah, that's pretty messed up. But what it sounds like is, try and get paid for your beats in the beginning, but definitely try and level up. But then once you get to the position where you can start making moves like that and leveling up, like where you get in that kind of demand.
I'm going to tell people, I'm going to give people some free game right here. Real finesse. Try to stick with an artist. Every producer got one artist they stick with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Metro got, he got a couple, but he got like The Future or like, you know, Metro and whoever, or June and Mozzie or fucking, it's all kind of people, and it, like Zaytoven and Gucci Man, like, you feel me? So try to stick with an artist. And the finesse in the Bay is produce a whole tape for that artist, right?
Gotcha.
And when they do go to Empire, or when they do go to whatever distributor they go to, make it a you and them. So it'd be like, say if I produced the whole tape for T.O.
Yeah.
It'd be like, Young T.O. would be the artist on the tape. But when you look at the splits from iTunes, it'd be T.O. 50%, Remedy 50%. Because I produced that, the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But the way that work is, me personally, I wouldn't even charge somebody up front. If I'm going to take shit off the back end, I wouldn't charge somebody up front. Only because I know how bad the business is in the Bay. Like, if I was somewhere down south or something, you would charge up front and still get back in.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
But it don't work like that. So probably would cancel the upfront charge for what we going to make it.
Yeah. It's kind of just like a business as well. Like, especially when starting out, I mean, that sounds pretty solid, like investing your time into something that's going to pay you later, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just something like that. And I don't know. I think that's some pretty solid advice right there.
Definitely. Definitely. It's just know, though, in the Bay, this shit ain't it, like, people make it seem like it's all good and glitz and glamour, but motherfuckers be scared to say it, that behind the scenes is fucked. Like, business is fucked up, bro.
I'm going to pull up the questions I got here.
A lot of people don't even know the money they have laying around, like, that they supposed to have in their own pocket that somebody else might got in their pocket, or that is just out there. Because ASCAP, the way ASCAP and shit work, you can essentially have money.
Tilted it down a little bit, just pull it up. Yeah, there. You're good.
You can essentially just have money laying, just a check for you. You just don't know how to sign up for it.
Yeah.
But it'd be a check for you as a producer, and that shit's crazy.
Damn. Well, I got two questions for you.
Okay.
This isn't even a question. The homie Dar says, my favorite Bay Area rapper.
Dars, man. What's up with Dars?
What's up with Dars? He didn't even ask a question, man. That's weak. And then Egos.mr says, what artist do you want to collaborate with next?
Damn, that's a good question. I was going in and out.
Yeah, it's just the headphones. You hear it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right,
that's a good question. I'm not really extra collaborative, which is weird. Like, I've always been, like, just me and my circle of people.
Gotcha.
But anybody who can help me advance my career, I'm with that.
Yeah.
Or anybody who can, who just a dope musician. If your shit tight to me, and I feel like we can make something tight, I'm with that, too.
That's what's up. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it gotta be something for me, though. I don't like, I see a lot of pointless collaborations happen. Like, I'm not into that. Like, just doing it just to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it's a chance it can blow up, or it's a chance, but if I don't genuinely feel a way about it, I'm probably not gonna fuck with it.
Gotcha. Well, besides that, one of my favorite videos and one of probably your biggest tracks, what's the actual name of it? Don't Love Me?
Yeah, Don't Love Me.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that and how that all came about, because that video is pretty sick, too, and I saw you posting it yesterday as well.
Long story short, I made the song on Instagram Live. I just had the beat for hella long. I had a different song on the beat. It wasn't sticking to me. And I was listening to 50 Cent, got a song called I Know You Don't Love Me.
Okay.
And he say, you know, he's kind of similar. Like, he's talking about everybody else in G-Unit. Like, you ain't the same when Yayo around, or you ain't the same when Young Buck in town and all of that kind of shit. And I just thought to say Bay Area rappers.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a thought out. Like, it wasn't thought out, but it was like a quick thinking marketing plan. Because I know if I say your name in a song, you wouldn't mind promoting it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I said.
Yeah, you literally name dropped everyone in that song.
And I personally know these people. So now that I'm sending it to you and I know you and I'm saying your name in a song, it's kind of hard not to post it. It's like, fuck it, I fuck with him. And he said my name. So
yeah, that's cool. You got G-Eazy Gerald in there. That was sick.
That's crazy. I didn't know G-Eazy either. That's crazy, though. I didn't know him before then. But he fucked with the song Extra Tough. And like, when I was in L.A., he had, like, a fans-only show, like, some real close-knit, like...
Okay, yeah, you know, like, something promoting an album or something?
Yeah, it was, like, a small-ass show, though. But he invited me up there, and we hollered for a minute and everything.
That's what's up.
And
that's cool.
Some crazy L.A. party with hella stars and shit with him.
Damn.
Kind of crazy shit like that.
That's cool.
It's pretty tight.
That's tight, yeah. That's cool, yeah, the video. And then... you worked with B-Gigs on that one. You worked shot a lot of videos with B-Gigs.
Shot it. He did the first quick edit of it, and I don't know. I feel like it needed to be something. Like, I need to incorporate people somehow into it rather than it just
okay.
Be
so
me
before
driving.
It was just you driving around,
driving, and then the storyline with the girl in there. Shout out to her, Bianca. But then I end up going to his house and just sitting there editing and thinking shit out. I'm like, fuck, how can I make this, like, make people feel involved? Because people were sending in hella videos.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was trying to find a way to make them, you know, put them in there. So I just came up with the concept of, like, the phone and...
Yeah, like, no, that looked tight. Like, I definitely liked the layout of it, and it definitely... I mean, that itself could almost be its own video, too.
Yeah.
You should definitely release that again on IGTV with, like, a vertical one.
That's what... You know what's crazy? It's crazy because... shout out Raj, Rex Life Raj. He was like, bro, this was before I even did the video. He like, bro, when you drop a video for that, just do everybody that's singing a song, just make them all sing the whole song and just make that the video.
Yeah.
And I was like, it did sound like a good idea, but... I just didn't do it.
No, I like the way it is, and vertical video wasn't really that popping like as it is now. I don't know.
It'd be tight to just be like click on there and be like see the whole video.
Yeah, see the whole video. I mean, you could even keep the same performances of you, just like, you know, how you slide it left and right and you can kind of have it in the beginning.
I had to get at B-Gigs about
that. Yeah, but that's tight.
A power move.
Yeah, it'd be cool to just have on the IGTV, get it popping again.
Yeah.
How do you feel about IGTV?
Weird.
It's
I never tapped into it, though.
I know. I found myself on it like once or twice, and like it's kind of cool, but it's just like, I don't know. A lot of people don't know how to use it right. Yeah. Like, they'll still put like 10-second videos on there, and I'm just like, that's not what this is for.
What I used it for is... the visuals that I don't have on my YouTube that I just never put out, that I never really quite liked.
Gotcha.
I just like exclusive IGTV.
Yeah. I put like my reel on there, but I don't know. It's all right. I think I put a tutorial on there. I don't know.
I just think somebody just, you know, all it's going to take for the right person to figure out how to use the motherfucker and use it to its maximum potential.
Yeah.
A lot of people going to jump on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you probably jump from like every social, huh? Like, being an artist, you've probably been on, like...
Before being an artist, Black Planet, I was, like, hella young. Like, I was not... Black Planet is, like, MySpace before MySpace.
Damn. Yeah, I don't know that. I wasn't even on MySpace. I was in, like, sixth grade.
Man, Black Planet was, like... I was, like, fourth grade.
Damn.
Like, I was not supposed to be on the internet, bro. But, like, shout out to Bang Bros, too. That's when that shit first came out. I was, like, all over the fucking Bang Bros shit, too. Heavy. But Black Planet, from Black Planet to MySpace, I was late to Facebook. Everybody would tell me about Facebook, but I never tapped into it until after MySpace. And then Twitter. I was early on Twitter, too.
Gotcha. I feel like Twitter was pretty big. Probably still is, but I've never been good at Twitter. I don't know. I'm not good at typing.
Yeah, I had
like
Snapchat
with my words.
You know, Instagram and all that type of shit, too.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was going to ask you, so with the wheelchair, that's one thing that you've really built into your brand and like really talked about. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, because a lot of people, I don't know, like, I think that's like one thing that makes an artist is that they're authentic. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that you do really well is you're really authentic with who you are and you really talk about like what's really going on, like what you said, and you tell your story. Cause like in your songs, and you also, some of your like albums and whatnot have like play on words, like
definitely a lot of them do. That kind of came natural.
Yeah.
I don't know how I just came up with like champion in the chair. I guess it's cause I was like in a, when I was in a parties and shit, it's just something that made me stand out.
Yeah.
So I wanted my music to match who I was, and I just championed the chair because it's like something that's easily noticeable. Like you see that dude in a wheelchair in a party, you damn near gonna know that's Remedy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I had a name before I was rapping and shit. It's crazy. Like I was already Remedy before I was Remedy. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just ran with a twerk chair.
Uh-huh.
Twerk chair. And then when I it was this dude out in Vegas that I was just DMing on Twitter about designing a cover for it. And I was just like, bro, I just want it to be something wild, like a wheelchair handicap placard with a girl twerking on that nigga. Like,
yeah.
Something crazy, like.
Yeah.
And I ended up running with it. And we put together a couple little mock-ups, and I picked one, and we just ran with
it. That's cool. Did you ever feel like in the beginning that you didn't want to do that? Like you didn't want to like rap about like
the chair
being
shit?
In the chair and shit?
I kind of wanted to because I knew
with
it. it was gonna
make you stand apart. Yeah. That's cool.
Because
I know some people would feel that way, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people would be like, oh, I don't want to talk about that, you know? And like, but I think that's cool that you embraced it and made it what makes you stand apart, you know?
Yeah. See, the thing is, though, in music with me, it's like my getaway or my therapy session.
Yeah.
So, and that's why you get like actually my honest truth in music is because it's a lot of shit I wouldn't, like if you was to ask me about my situation, it's a lot of shit I wouldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you listen to the song, you would hear that shit. You feel me? The shit that I wouldn't tell you, you would hear in the music.
Yeah.
So that just is like natural for me to speak on my situation and be so open and just say what it is. Even shit that would be, you know, sometimes it'll be looked at as exposing myself or, you know, something like that. I don't mind it because if anybody going to tell you it's going to be me, I'd rather be me up front first before I let, you know, try to put up a fake persona.
Yeah.
Facade. Over time in my career, though, what I have learned is the blessing, you know, the curse, which was originally my curse, the chair, is a blessing, but it's also a curse in the long run with the music shit because it can stagnate me because I can be just known as just the wheelchair rapper instead of the talented rapper that's in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
You know
what See, I'm that's saying? What I like with like that video, what's it called? Don't Love Me, because you guys didn't do like a performance in the wheelchair as well.
Yeah.
So it kind of just like if someone saw it for the first time, they wouldn't know you're in a wheelchair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was a thought out. That was thought out too. Me and my guy, C. Lee, shout out C. Lee. I ain't gonna lie, he like damn near a podcaster too. He be on Instagram Live talking to people and making people thinking. People be on there talking about a lot of shit on his
body. Okay.
I gotta check him out. The C. Lee brand.
Check it out.
But me and him was like, you know, we just met each other and kind of clicked. We two thinking minds and a working people that just was, he had a way of getting people together, and I already had some kind of status, so it's like, if you know how to get people together and brand well, and I have this status, let's come together to where you can help me brand my, you feel me, and we can make it a business, which we did. So, we just had, like, he just was like, bro, we gotta just kind of separate from the chair and just let people know you're a good artist before they know you in a chair, so just do, like, a video. He's like, for this is gonna be like, it's like your biggest song right now. Just do the video to where if somebody seen it, they wouldn't know you was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But when they go look at your other shit, they're gonna be like, damn, he did this and he's in a chair and make it like better than I feel
so when they dig deeper.
It'd be better than.
Because that's always cool when you dig deeper into a like an artist, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know about them that much, and then you dig deeper, and then you like get more involved, and then I think that's like why we like stick with artists and like continue listening to them. Like Mac Miller, for instance, you know what I mean? Like, he like just grew so much and changed and like, I don't know, his music style. So I don't know, I think that's pretty cool.
Hell yeah. So recently I've been trying to find a way to finesse it and work myself out of being the wheelchair rapper into the rapper that just so happens to be in a chair.
Yeah, that one Instagram clip of you is hella sick too, where you went out on that performance and you were you came out on like the walker. Yeah, that was tight. The energy in that crowd looked crazy.
Man, crazy. That was what SOB.
Yeah, I think it was SOB
show,
right?
They did the 3 days. They sold out 3 days in San Francisco. Two in a small room of the Regency and one in a big room.
Yeah.
And in the big room, I was like, it's some way I gotta win fans over. I know these are their fans, basically. Like, you feel me? So I'm opening up for them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I gotta win people over somehow. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm gonna just start performing in my chair. And then in the middle of my set, I'm gonna come out on a walker. Shit ended up working. Stole the show.
That's tight.
Well, at least in my perspective. You know, they still had a great show. Yeah. It's just they fans, so they're going to rock it out. But
no, that's definitely a big highlight, and that's something cool.
I tried to have my moment. I had to have my own moments. You know what I'm saying?
That's cool. And then one thing that I've seen you do in the past is you'll do, I think you call it role models.
Yeah.
And you'll pull up, and you'll just like, what do you kind of do in those sessions?
That was for my tape. I had a tape coming out called Role Models, like, something that was important to me because I kind of, it's like one of them tapes where I dug deep and kind of reflected on my life.
Yeah.
But I was pulling up to do studio sessions. I pay for a couple of hours, buy pizza, drinks.
Yeah.
And just have, this was before the tape come out, just have everybody come to the sessions and hear the tape and explain to them why I'm making these songs and why I said this or this and that.
Yeah.
And let them ask questions. And it was like more of an interacting thing with people who supported me, because you know the internet shit is cool, but you know I was born in the 90s. A lot of people is born in the 90s, but you know I feel like the early 90s, we kind of like the last of the generation that had to actually go outside to play and meet people, and you feel me, before social media. So now motherfuckers born in late 90s and 2000s and shit like that, they ain't never had to just go and be like,
it's weird.
Let me go down the street and meet somebody.
Exactly.
Like that. It's just social media.
Yeah, no, it's hella weird. Even just like meeting people on like Instagram, and then just like talking to them, and then just like meeting them for the first time in person. Yeah. It's weird, you know.
Yeah, and that's part of why I did that, because it's like we, you know, some of those people is the 2000s people that never had to come out and meet. So I'm like, come out, you know, come to these things and then make it real personal, and we're going to sit here and really talk. You can really meet somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
You feel me? Especially somebody who you, I guess, if they do, they may idolize me. Because I know at a young age, if a rapper would have came to my house or my hood or
exactly,
to a studio session and talked to me, bro, my life probably would be different, like the way I would... my outlook on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the realest things that you can do, and I think it definitely helps impact kids and just, I don't know, you never know how much it can help them, you know?
Yeah, and then some of those people be other artists, so I let them play their music for the other people there, and they may even gain fans.
Yeah,
me? So it's like...
give them advice and stuff like that, too. That's cool.
It's like I said, it goes back into humanizing somebody. Instead of looking at me like somebody who you can't touch, you probably never gonna meet, you meet me, I'm normal. I'm just like you. I'm working hard though. I'm trying to make it happen. You feel me? So I like being like, you know, and that's a part of being a role model. It's like, you feel me? Know that me and you are the same. Know that we have the same opportunity, and I'm going as far as I can with it, and you should too.
That's what's up. Sick. Well, I think we're getting towards the end. Is there anything that we could be looking forward to in the future of Remedy?
More Remedy, I got some people from my hood that's doing their thing. Lil Beans, Zay Bang, Trey Bands. It's a lot of young talent out of San Francisco, and I like it. I'm trying to get more involved into it. I got to start sending them little fools some beats and stuff like that, man. And start connecting the dots, like getting them into contact with people like you or people like B-Gigs to where their videos can become better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like I want to do more of that, more connecting some dots. While still being active and still being Remedy, I want to connect some dots with, like, the people who like on a come up that want to transition into something, you know, real, something serious instead yeah. of just being like bullshitting around with music, who want to make it a real actual business.
Yeah.
I want to transition them into that.
That's what's up. That's cool. Tight. Is there a secret message that someone should comment down below if they made it to the end? If they listen to this whole podcast, what should they comment below?
You dig.
Sick. All right. It's the end of the podcast. If you guys enjoyed it, make sure to leave it a review on iTunes. I don't think you can leave reviews on Spotify, but you can listen to it anywhere. Subscribe. Make sure to check out Remedy on Instagram at Remedy415.
Yeah.
And make sure to check him out on Spotify, iTunes at Remedy. He's got tons of songs on there. So make sure to check that out. And post this on your Instagram story and tag both of us. We'll repost
for sure.
And we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for listening.